Apocalyptic Genre by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract of this talk. A look at the features which are usually present in works described as apocalyptic, together with a listing of such works as they appear in the Old Testament, New Testament, and extra-biblical sources. Some important qualifications need to be made in lumping these works together. What do we mean by apocalyptic genre? Well, that's going to depend upon a distinction between apocalyptic and prophecy. Apocalyptic, those ancient visionary writings which purport to reveal the mystery of the end of the age and of the glories of the age to come. Prophecy, an utterance of a prophet, one who claims to speak for God. Since it often pertained to the future, prophecy comes to be identified with foretelling future events, usually distinguished from narrative, law, psalms, wisdom. But prophecy is not strictly a category of form, but rather a claim of source. These two definitions come from Richard Solon, a handbook of biblical criticism. So apocalyptic genre would be the genre of books that are like the Apocalypse, the Greek name for our New Testament book of Revelation. So Revelation-like books, ancient visionary writings which purport to reveal the mystery of the end of the age and the glories of the age to come. There are a number of characteristics that are felt to indicate that a work is apocalyptic, and we'll list about 10 of them here. Not all of these would be felt to apply to every book that's put in it, but if you have a number of these, then the book is generally felt to be, or the work is generally felt to be, apocalyptic. The last two we'll suggest we have some reservations about, and we'll say something about those, but here we have characteristics of apocalyptic: revelation of a visionary sort, extensive use of symbolism, a tendency to pessimism regarding human nature, a cosmic perspective, world-shaking events, triumph of God, deterministic, the events are set, dualistic, struggle between good and evil, and then the last two, pseudonymous, claims a famous author, and history rewritten as prophecy. Let's walk over each of those and say a word about them in connection with, say, Book of Revelation, which is, after all, you might think, the prime book on which this genre is based. Well, obviously, the Book of Revelation is a revelation of a visionary sort. It represents itself as giving us a picture of what's going to happen at the end of the age. It makes extensive use of symbolism, the sword coming out of the mouth of Jesus, Jesus pictured as a lion, as a lamb that's been slain, that sort of thing. Tendency to pessimism regarding human nature suggests this probably was not written by an evangelical, but the idea here is that book, the work that's apocalyptic, pictures humans as being pretty serious sinners. Okay? So, and that that's not going to be solved by them merely getting better on their own. Cosmic perspective, it's basically looking at the things on the overall thing. So Book of Revelation sees a new heaven and new earth, sees shaking events in the heavens, that sort of thing, that kind of cosmic perspective. World-shaking events, obviously earthquakes and such, and the destruction of kingdoms and the end of history as we know it, that sort of thing. Again, a feature of Book of Revelation. Triumph of God, God's going to win in the end. Deterministic, the events are set. Well, the events are predicted, and if they're going to happen, then they're set in some sense, huh? Dualistic, a struggle between good and evil, that certainly characterized the Book of Revelation. These last two do characterize some of the extra-biblical apocalypses, and liberals think some of them characterize the biblical apocalypses as well. Pseudonymous claims a famous author, but it's not really written by him. We'll see Book of Enoch and Baruch and things of that sort, and liberals sometimes claim that that's so for the Book of Revelation, that it claims a famous author, John the Apostle, but it's not really by him. We think that's mistaken. And there are actually some liberals who think that John wrote the Apocalypse, Book of Revelation, but didn't write the Gospels. Well, we think that's mistaken, too. And then history rewritten as prophecy, I think, again, is something that characterizes some of the extra-biblical apocalypses, attempting to look like it's a prophecy written centuries ago when, in fact, it is written after the events that it predicts. So those are the lists that are usually characterized as usually given as characteristics of apocalyptic, and nobody would claim that a given book to be apocalyptic would have to satisfy all of these, but only that it would satisfy several of these. What Old Testament material is usually considered apocalyptic? Well, the passage in Numbers chapters 23 and 24 where Balaam the seer gives his oracles that were supposed to be against Israel, as Balak hired him to do, but in fact he says God will not allow him to say such things, and so he speaks oracles of blessing, but they are visions of the future as well for Israel. Isaiah 24 through 27, sometimes called the little apocalypse, events of the end of the age. For those sections in Ezekiel where you see the chariot with the cherubim, the departure, the glory from the temple, the invasion of Israel at the end times, the visionary temple, the parabolic visions, the eagle and the vines and that sort of thing. Those would be parts of Ezekiel that are usually considered apocalyptic. Daniel, of course, has the parabolic visions of the statue with the different types of metal making up the different parts of the statue, vision of the four beasts, etc., would be material that falls into that category, the various dreams he has regarding the future and the end of the age. And the book of Zechariah also has parabolic visions and events of the end of the age, the visions in the first part of Zechariah and the events at the end in chapters 9 through 14. New Testament material usually considered apocalyptic. The so-called Olivet Discourse of Jesus, given in Matthew 24 and 25, Mark 13, Luke 21, where Christ reveals the signs of the end and the second coming to the disciples. 1 Thessalonians 4 and 5, where Paul recounts the information he has regarding the second coming and the resurrection and the end of the age. And 2 Thessalonians chapters 1 and 2, where he recounts the second coming and the man of lawlessness. And then, primarily, the book of Revelation with its visions of heaven, with its symbolism, with its picture of the end of the age, be the New Testament material usually considered apocalyptic. Besides these materials, however, there's a fair bit of what we might call extra-biblical material that would be considered apocalyptic. And here we list a 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Enoch. These are books that come in what we call the pseudepigrapha, the books of false authorship is where the name pseudepigrapha came from, but liberals believe that there are pseudepigrapha in the Bible. First, Enoch, visionary journeys of Enoch through the world and the underworld, sees the angels and the Messiah and gets something of world history. Second Enoch, kind of a complement to that, a visionary journey through the heavens, and a revelation regarding creation and world history down to the flood. And then third Enoch, rather strangely named, a visionary journey of Rabbi Ishmael to heaven and secrets from the angel Metatron regarding the cosmos and the end. Also, the books 2nd and 3rd Baruch would be characterized as extra-biblical apocalypses. 2nd Baruch gives us a preview of world history down to the time of the Messiah. And 3rd Baruch has Baruch's complaint regarding the destruction of Jerusalem, which then leads to his being able to visit the different heavens. Among the Qumran materials, the Dead Sea Scroll materials, we have the War Scroll, the more detailed title, The War of the Sons of Light Against the Sons of Darkness, which gives rules for conducting an end-time war against the Gentiles. Apocryphal work, The Assumption of Moses, in which Moses, before his departure from the earth, is revealing the history of Israel. And then the martyrdom and ascension of Isaiah. Isaiah visits heaven and sees the future and then dies by being sawn in two by the king. Fourth Ezra, seven visions answering Ezra's questions regarding Jerusalem, regarding the number of saved, and regarding the history down to the time of the Messiah. Those would be extra-biblical apocalypses that would have, you might think, a sort of Old Testament flavor to them, but are not in the Old Testament. The following ones have sort of a New Testament flavor to them, but are not in the New Testament. The Shepherd of Hermas, in which the fellow Hermas receives various allegorical visions from a woman and from a shepherd regarding the Christian life. Visionary is not really what we think of as eschatological at all. The Apocalypse of Peter, Christ on the Mount of Olives describes to Peter heaven and hell, especially the punishments. The Apocalypse of Paul, Paul is carried up to the third heaven, so is attempting to fill out a cryptic remark he makes along those lines. He meets the angels and the patriarchs, and see something about the blessing that's going to come on the righteous and the punishment that's going to come on the wicked. And then the Apocalypse of Thomas, events leading up to the end in a seven-day scheme. Well, that's a tour of some of the extra-biblical apocalypses as well. What can we say in summary on apocalyptic? Well, I'd say there are diverse materials here, and that's particularly so when both the canonical, that is the biblical, and the non-canonical, the non-biblical apocalypses are lumped together. The origin of the genre apocalyptic is earlier than the intertestament period, though perhaps the intertestament period is the time when it really begins to flourish, and the genre continues for centuries after that time, beyond the time of the Book of Revelation. Except for New Testament letter of Jude, there's no clear evidence that canonical works borrowed from non-canonical works. There are possibilities, but no clear evidence. Rather, the dependence, I'll, by the way, discuss the Jude situation in my PowerPoint on Jude. You can look that up on our every website. Rather, the dependence seems to go the other way. That's to say, that First Enoch seems to be very much dependent on Ezekiel and Daniel, suggesting that those two works were actually around before First Enoch is written. And the Shepherd of Hermas and the Apocalypse of Peter seem to be very strongly dependent on the Book of Revelation, suggesting that Revelation was around before Methusalem was written. This does not mean that canonical apocalypses cannot use symbolism existing in the culture at the time. These works are written by humans and ultimately by God, intended to communicate with people living in the culture at the time they're written, so we shouldn't be surprised about that. My studies indicate that there's some Greco-Roman symbolism in the Book of Revelation, and I have a PowerPoint talk on that, which you might want to have a look at. Two easy-to-see examples are the seven-sealed book in chapter 5 and 6. Of the Book of Revelation, and the reference to the white stone in chapters 2 and 3 of the letters of the seven churches are both items that don't occur in the Old Testament background. The book and a sealed book does, but in fact do occur in the Greco-Roman culture. A seven-sealed document is the way that the Romans would seal wills. And white stone is actually used a couple of different ways in Greco-Roman culture. One of them would be that when juries voted on the guilt or innocence of a person who was accused before them, they would cast a white stone for innocence and a black stone for guilty. And the other is a banquet ticket. Stones would often be issued, sent around, I guess, with the inviter to the guests as the ticket to get into a banquet, I presume, be a large banquet where it might otherwise be too big to realize by sight who had been invited. Well, so canonical apocalypses can use symbolism existing in culture at the time. There's no real evidence for pseudonymity, that is, false authorship, in any of the canonical apocalypses. It's true that there are a number of liberals who doubt that the Gospel of John, that the Apostle John wrote the Book of Revelation, and the vast majority of liberals doubt that Daniel wrote the Book of Daniel, but I'm saying no real evidence, not that there aren't people who hold the view. what does this whole area of apocalyptic mean for interpretation? Well, it's helpful to have read over the list of characteristics I gave you a little earlier and be on the lookouts for things like that in connection with reading the book of Revelation or reading the book of Daniel or reading the Olivet Discourse, etc. But just saying that this work is apocalyptic is no way to evaporate the fact that it is teaching that there is going to be an end of the age, there's going to be an end of this history as we know it when Christ comes back one day, that there's going to be a final judgment, that the wicked are going to face a terrible fate, but one which is just. And the blessed, those who have been declared righteous by God are going to face a marvelous future, which we don't deserve, but which God in his mercy has given us. It doesn't mean that we can evaporate the teaching on the eternal state. It's there, and Jesus himself has told us about it. Some comments on genre. Genre studies often overlook a couple of important items. We can learn some important things from genre studies by looking at shared characteristics of letters, or of works that go by the name of Acts, or works that go by the name of Gospels, and things of that sort. But genre studies often overlook two important items. That is, the truth versus the fiction of the book's content. That is what this book talking about true? Right? And the public versus the private status of the book's circulation. Let's have a word about each of those items here. Truth versus fiction. The Book of Mormon shares many genre features with the Old Testament. They're both narratives. They're both narratives that are set back in what we would call Old Testament times and such. They involve wars and apostasy and revival and things of that sort. But the Book of Mormon is fiction. And the Old Testament is history. Now, obviously, Mormons think the Book of Mormon is not fiction. And liberals think a lot of the Old Testament is fiction, etc. But we're dealing, again, with historical evidence, and with historical evidence that hasn't already answered the question that miracles cannot occur, and therefore can't believe any account that's got miracles in it. Book of Mormon shares many features, genre features, with the Old Testament, but the Book of Mormon is fiction and Old Testament history. The apocryphal Acts, the Acts of Paul and Thecla, the Acts of Andrew, the Acts of Thomas, etc., resemble the canonical Acts of the Apostles. But the latter, the Acts of the Apostles, is history, and the former is probably largely fiction, maybe a few features of tradition that work their way into these. Similarly with the canonical versus the apocryphal Acts, canonical versus the apocryphal Gospels, that is with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John on the one hand, the canonical Gospels, and Thomas and Philip and Peter and such on the other hand. I suggest that the canonical apocalypses are real visions from God, while the apocryphal apocalypses are either not real visions, or if they are real visions, they're not from God, and that makes them all the worse. Public versus private. The canonical apocalypses apparently were in public circulation since the time of their claimed authors. That the apostles knew about the Olivet Discourse from the time Jesus said it and from the time it was first written up, whether that be Mark or Matthew, in circulation from that time. Likewise for Daniel and Ezekiel, etc. But there's no reason to think that this is true for the apocryphal ones. No reason to think that the Book of First Enoch has been circulating since patriarchal times. There is some reason to believe it goes back in the intertestamental period. Compare the Gospel of Thomas. These are the secret words of Judas, Didymus, Thomas, etc., which Jesus gave him. Why the secret words? Well, because they weren't in circulation in the apostolic period. Like the guy that comes up to you in the streets of New York and opens his jacket and shows you a bunch of watches and says, "Want a good buy on a Rolex, buddy? Okay. You should know more trust works that start out with these or the secret words of, then you should trust some fellow like that." Compare Joseph Smith finding the golden plates in upstate New York 1,400 years after they were allegedly buried, and being able to read them by using a pair of spectacles that turned the Reformed Egyptian into King James English, etc. My suggestion is that these non-biblical apocalypses were semi-secret works of Mormon-like groups in antiquity. I say Mormon-like, not meaning they had the same theology, but they had departures of various sorts from the biblical teaching, and they were groups that were trying to start their own operation. I call them semi-secret works because all such groups have occasional cases of apostasy, and so information about their secrets gets out. So although the Mormon eternal wedding ceremonies or wedding for in eternity ceremonies are closed to the public and therefore supposedly secret, information about them has gotten out, and if you want to research it, you can find out stuff about that, and the various other sealing ceremonies and such have gotten out as well. So there were people that were split off from various of the early Gnostic groups and would start their own Gnostic groups and bring some of the stuff with them and add some other material of their own, etc. These two matters, the question of truth versus fiction and the question of public versus private circulation, will have considerable bearing on whether false authorship was okay in antiquity. Obviously, it was okay to the founders' heretical cults who wrote such stuff, but these founders' heretical cults would have been in big trouble with their own followers if the followers had found out that that's what the founders had done. They'd written up such stuff from scratch without, in fact, having received any visions or that sort of thing. It was not okay with the Christian church. We have at least one example of where an elder was thrown out of his position because he admitted having written the Acts of Paul and Thecla, though he claimed he did it for love of Paul. And the basic response of the Christian leadership was, you do not invent fiction and pretend it's something that the apostles really did. I suspect the apocryphal works were written to mimic the canonical works, the biblical works, when these became well known. It's fairly obvious that there was a great interest in apocalyptic that developed in the intertestament period. And my own guess is that this happened when it turns out that some of the predictions of Daniel made hundreds of years earlier now come true in the intertestament period at the Maccabean revolt. And the result is then that a number of people start organizations that pretend to have revelations of that sort. Well, that's the end of our discussion. Don't dismiss end times prophecy as just apocalyptic. Pay attention to what it says. If this stuff is from the Bible, which we've got excellent evidence is really from God, and that's what lots of my other PowerPoint talks are about, we should then pay attention to it.